Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShare Health. We got you.
Welcome to Sunday Take for April 6, 2025. I'm your host, Blois Olson, and it has been another week to watch. And the week ahead is going to get a little more dicey as we go. Obviously, Trump and the tariffs drove markets into a plunge and a certain amount of global economic chaos. Meanwhile, here in Minnesota, we escaped not having a legislature get into a scandal until potentially Friday, which was when the reformer reported that 2 years ago, Senate President Bobby Joe Champion steered and authored legislation that sent $3 million to one of his former clients. Champion says it's a pro bono client and that the legal work was done before the bill was authored, but I would expect Republicans to even go so far as to file an ethics complaint in the coming week, which Champion is on the ethics committee. So obviously some complexities there. Governor Walz will head to Ohio tomorrow, Monday, for the latest in his town hall meetings and series and kind of this national tour that he's been on. One of the things that struck me is he's doing this national tour. What else is he doing in these towns? Is he raising money? I think the next financial reports will show us just how serious he is about running for reelection. And I know that's been the buzz behind the scenes is if Walz doesn't run, who will? That will be a subject of a morning take later this week. But we're focused on the U.S. Senate race. And this week, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joins me for an extended interview. It's the first time we've talked since the census, where we did a forum on the census. And it's the first time she's been back on the show since then. She's obviously been through a lot. And what has she learned as Lieutenant Governor? What does she want to bring to the Senate? I think that's kind of where people are trying to see what is this U.S. Senate race going to look like next year? Who are going to be the players? Melissa Lopez-Franson was on the program last week. If you didn't catch it, go check out that podcast. But we'll have Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan in just a few minutes. Before we get to Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a message from Minnesota's hospitals. Did you know that in one way or another, Medicaid supports all of us in Minnesota? It is the largest source of federal health funding that Minnesota hospitals rely on to keep their doors open. It's a critical program, but it faces unprecedented threats that would strip healthcare from vulnerable Minnesotans. It would devastate parts of our healthcare system and shift massive costs from the federal government to the state of Minnesota. Minnesota hospitals want you to know that it's time to protect Medicaid's promise of healthcare access for all Minnesotans, regardless of your age, your income, or your health status. Medicaid matters to Minnesota. You can learn more at protectmnpatients.org. Again, learn more at protectmnpatients.org. That's a message from the Minnesota Hospital Association. When we come back, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan and why she thinks she should be a U.S. Senator. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. As I mentioned in the open, my guest is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. She's also running for the U.S. Senate and has launched her campaign. She's been out meeting with folks, listening to folks, and she joins me now. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Blois. Appreciate it.
Well, I feel like, you know, you and I have known each other a long time, and Minnesotans have gotten to know you over the last 6 years. But talk about who you are and why you want to be a U.S. Senator.
Sure. Well, I grew up in the community of St. Louis Park, of which you are very familiar, Blois. My mom moved us there when I was just a baby using a Section 8 housing voucher. We relied on SNAP, which back in the day we called food stamps to keep food on the table. And I was that kid with a different colored lunch ticket. The child care assistance program allowed my mom to go back to school to get a better paying job. She became a phlebotomist after getting a certificate from St. Kate's, and that helped to lift our family into the middle class. And, you know, I was a kid with really severe asthma growing up, and it felt like there were times when, you know, I was in the hospital more than I was as out. And so Medicaid was what I was able to use to receive my health care and to stay alive. And so so many of these things that we're talking about right now in this country feel deeply personal. I know what it feels like to think the bottom could fall out at any moment. And I know that there are too many people who now feel that way. And that's why I'm running for U.S. Senate. I think we need more people who understand what that feels like. And folks, you know, who frankly, I've been fighting my entire career for economic security for families at Children's Defense Fund, in the legislature, and as Lieutenant Governor. And I want to bring that fight to Washington, D.C. So that's why I'm running. And I also, I love Minnesota. It's born and raised. This is my home. And we could use a little bit more Minnesota in Washington.
As you think about that, you served in the House, you've been Lieutenant Governor. You look at D.C., you look at the dynamics, you say bringing some fight to D.C. A lot of people think there's just too much fight in politics. How do you see an opportunity to either bring people together, or what common issues have you heard about as you've traveled the state?
Sure. So, you know, we've been holding what we're calling kitchen table conversations across the state. And it's new. I think it's different. It's not like the typical, you know, come in and give a stump and then do Q&A, because I think people want something more than that right now. So the way that we're doing these conversations is we're having folks come in and people are saying, you know, these are the things that I'm worried about. This is, you know, who I'm fighting for, and then what brings me hope in this moment. And we've got flip chart paper and post-it notes, you know, all over the place, and people are talking to their neighbors. And what we've also found is, like, sure, there's a lot of Democrats who show up, but there's also been Republicans. We had a former Republican state senator who came to one of these conversations who said, I'm glad you're here. And, you know, we also have folks who don't identify with the party at all. There was a guy who came up to me. He's like, I've never been to anything like this before. His name was Russ. He's like, but I'm a postal worker, and I'm really afraid. And so I'm here because I want to get involved. And that's been the experience. So I think, you know, we're trying to demonstrate in this moment what this can look like, because I think there are folks too who showed up who voted for Donald Trump. And rather than like get on our high horse, right, or like shame or blame people in this moment, it's come on in because it's literally all of us against extremist billionaires. And the things that we have been hearing are concerns about attacks on Social Security, Medicaid, the Department of Education going away, and what that means for children with disabilities. Those are things that like we can agree on where we might not agree on everything, but there are places where I think Minnesotans can really come together in this moment. And that's what I'm interested in doing. The work, that I've done too, at Children's Defense Fund, sometimes my DFL colleagues or friends would get a little upset because we would have to have a Republican chief author a bill that maybe a Democrat had authored previously, and they'd get kind of crabby. And I'd say, listen, 2 years, a biennium in the life of a child is a really long time. And so, we've got to figure out how to move these things. And I just think that there's opportunity, especially in Minnesota. Certainly things feel divisive and toxic, but I still have a lot of hope, and I have hope for Washington, D.C. And I know that Minnesotans still value empathy, regardless of their political party. And so that's, I think, a place where we really need to lean in.
One of the things that I've just observed is across our institutions, just whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, there's just a decline in trust. Trust in government, trust in the media, trust in the system working. And it goes both ways, right? You have folks who depend on government who may not trust that it's there, but you also have people who are not anti-government, but they're worried about the resources within government. Can you talk about what you expect or what you would expect as a senator, to be that covenant between the federal government and the citizens?
Well, I think so much of it is really just in people being allowed to live their lives and live their life well, have choices and opportunity. And that should be the foundation, I think, for for everything that we do. It is, I think, sort of this agreement that we have that I should be able to have access to public schools and education. I should, be able to drive on a road where I'm not going to hit a pothole every, few feet. I should have access to the ability to, to make choices for my future and what kind of job I want to have. And that I should be able to make decisions, my own personal decisions, right, about how and when and if to become a parent. That also feels like something that is something that should be an agreement. But more than anything, I think, especially as Democrats, we have to do a better job listening to people. And there certainly was a sense where we're like, oh, the economy is going gangbusters, but people don't feel that way, and they certainly don't feel that way right now. And so meeting people where they're at, I think, is incredibly important. And sure, does there have to be, more efficiency? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that we completely eradicate, the things that help to keep our community safe. Like right now, what we see with Trump and Elon Musk, they are ransacking the government with sort of out any rhyme or reason. And decimating our public health system, that also feels like something that's an expectation that people have. Oh, I don't know, that there's food inspectors so that I don't, like get sick, that we have strategies and plans for infectious disease. Those are things that I think people have expectations will get done. And right now, the predictability of that is completely gone, and it's chaos. I think we can work together to figure out how to make federal government work better and still meet the expectations that people have to be safe and to have opportunity.
My guest is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanigan. She's running for the U.S. Senate, and this conversation's a part of her campaign for U.S. Senate. You said Democrats have to do a better job listening to people, and you also said we have to let people kind of live their lives. Is there a kind of a peel back, or you've been on the front lines of the politics of the last couple of years where People haven't felt like they needed to live their lives on both sides, and maybe government or politicians have suggested or projected the way people should live their lives. Have you learned from those conversations the way to talk about these issues? Is there a different way that you talk about issues that people react to versus how national figures have talked about them?
Well, I think the way that I have done, have tried to, the way that I've done my work is to just show up, and to try to, listen to folks. So much of, what we are doing, now, we've literally been all over the state, Brainerd, Woodlake, Bemidji, Hibbing, Duluth, Moorhead, St. Louis Park, Apple Valley, I think it's been a real privilege to hear a lot of the stories that people are sharing in those spaces, like just deeply personal stories. It's holding those things, like in Brainerd, I met a young man named Bentley, and he gave me a little Fimo clay heart that he made, and a baseball card or with his face on it, and his mom is worried about the Department of Education going away and what that means for Bentley, who is a child with disability, and is worried about Medicaid. And I think it is really focusing on the very human part of this, that I think can make a difference here. That I think is what people are interested in. It's really easy to sort of like slash and burn and what we see coming out of Washington. When you think it's just facts, figures, and statistics versus Bentley and his mom, who just wants to be a good mom and wants her kid to have opportunity, that I think is where we have to get back to. Certainly, there's toxicity and there's divisiveness and saying, some people are in and some people are out. But I think there's, certainly extremes on both sides. But if we get back to people just want to being able, like Bentley's mom just wants to be able to be a good mom. And, Lynn, who I met in Moorhead, her husband's a veteran who's battling mesothelioma. She just wants him to be able to get his treatments that cost $26,000 per treatment. And if their healthcare goes away, he just won't survive. And so, those are the things I think we have to be talking about. And, I think that is the work. And, some folks have said, like, boy, you sure got out there, early, like 21 months out. Like, that's, yeah. And we have to talk to a lot of people and we have to listen to a lot of folks. And especially in Greater Minnesota, we have to spend that time. And, I'm an organizer. That has been my life's work. And so, showing up and continuing to show up, I think, is a big part of how we respond to this. So that folks are like, oh, she was here, but then we didn't see her, for 9 months. It's like, I'm going to keep coming back because that I think is that voice, I think, is the covenant that we have with folks that we will be there. And even if we don't always agree all the time, we're going to show up.
As before we take the break, just you've been in the office for 6 years as the lieutenant governor. What have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about leading? What have you learned about listening in those 6 months through a pandemic and civil unrest, and all the things that you had a front row seat to?
So one thing I learned as a recovering legislator was that sometimes I didn't think enough about the executive branch as I was suggesting and moving things, right? So implementation is a really big deal, and having the runway to be able to do it and the resource to be able to do it well, I think is something that I'm absolutely more thoughtful about, and have chatted with my friends in the legislature about. I think even beyond being in the legislature and as a school board member as well, just seeing local government, state government, then being in the, you know, executive branch from the legislature, that the federal government certainly has an impact on all of those things and our ability to serve our constituents and do things well. But I learned that oftentimes, you know, this job was hard. It's hard. And I think governing through some of the most deeply traumatic things that have happened in our state and in our country, I learned to be strong in that people sharing really hard things, that I can hold that for them, that governing through even deep personal loss myself with, you know, my brother being one of the first people to pass away from COVID in Tennessee, and then continuing to govern and try to protect others. I learned that public health infrastructure is very important. And I've learned that, you know, I was grateful to represent St. Louis Park in the, in my hometown, in the legislature. And, you know, I spent a lot of time building my muscle around agriculture because, as you know, St. Louis Park is not a bastion of ag, right? But was important for me to do, you know, to do that work. So I spent a lot of times with our farmers, you know, fought for additional support for dairy farmers because of those relationships that I've built, emerging farmers, wanting young people to have this opportunity, you know, to purchase land, to if this is, you know, what they want, and how important it is for people to live in the place that they want to live. That is one of the biggest things I think that I have learned as Lieutenant Governor traveling across the state. Folks want opportunity in their hometown, and we need to do everything that we can to make sure that people, you know, people can do that. And that I think has been powerful. And also that, you know, my daughter, Siobhan, she's 12 and has sort of, you know, like grown up through, you know, through this whole process. She said, "My mom's job is to go on field trips and help people." And I think that's probably a pretty good assessment of what it is, that I get to go all across the state, hear directly from folks about what's working, what's not working, and then bring those ideas back to the Capitol and, you know, try to move them in partnership with, you know, with all of our folks in state government and the legislature. And, you know, that's been, has been really the honor of my lifetime to be able to do this work.
When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on Sunday Take. My guest is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. She's running for the U.S. Senate. We're talking about what she's learned in her 6 years as Lieutenant Governor and her previous experience. Lieutenant Governor, I mean, one of the things that Minnesota has long had is a diverse and stable economy, but we have not grown the way other states have. You brought up people living where they want to live and, you know, agricultural issues, things like that. Let's just start with Minnesota's rural economy. It is not grown at the same rate as the metro. It has major labor challenges that, frankly, you know, other parts of the state don't have, even though we have other labor challenges. Are there things that we need to do better, or ideas that you think we can get from other states, the federal government, to help the rural economy, whether it's agriculture or healthcare?
Certainly. I think, you know, as we've been traveling across the state, you know, both in these kitchen table conversations, but just, you know, in general, in the work that I've been able to do, a lot of the things that we're hearing from folks you know, in the urban core, the suburbs, or in greater Minnesota, is that people, I think, want a lot of the same things, right? They want to make sure that they have robust public schools. We've heard a lot about, you know, about these potential cuts, you know, to Medicaid. People want to have access to, you know, high quality healthcare and a provider where they can get that healthcare. You know, a lot of conversations about rural healthcare for women and for pregnant women who have to drive. Gee, I hope you have your baby on the exact date where, you know, so that you, if you have to drive, right, 2 to 3 hours to deliver, you know, so I think those are things that we, you know, that I hear about a lot. Access to childcare, where, you know, in greater Minnesota, where folks are saying, I'm driving one direction, right, for 45 minutes to drop off my kid, and then an hour in the other direction to then be able to get to work. So, you know, these are the things that I think if we have better partners in the federal government, we'll be able to, you know, to move. I know that that as you know, we talk about the rural economy, that you know, education has been a big part of that, but also people being able to be trained in the things that you know really matter to them. I think about you know, the additional programming that we've put forward to have folks be able to be trained in you know, in meat processing is something that I think is powerful. It feels like one thing, but then you know, there's so much opportunity that's able to grow from that. You know, we certainly know that the ability for folks to have you know, to have opportunity comes also from innovation. And that feels like while folks, you know, are worried about the future, that also feels like a piece that for Minnesota is really uniquely Minnesotan. We have, you know, in our state, Medical Alley, we have the Mayo Clinic, we have these places and spaces where people really look to Minnesota. And we need to continue to invest in that and lift that up, because I want folks to see Minnesota as a destination where they know that they will have the ability to attract new employees, but then also families who are there feel like, I'm going to put roots down here, right? I'm going to make sure that, you know, we have our kids can go to school here. I've got a good paying job. We've got the kind of robust infrastructure that is needed and necessary. And those are the investments that matter. But I'd also lift up something, you know, like sustainable aviation fuel, which is real nerdy, but I care a lot about it. And I think it is one of the things that we need to lean into even harder, which is, you know, this opportunity for both public and private partnership. You know, it was just like a little over a year ago, folks said, like, how do we make sure that we have the ability, right, to produce sustainable aviation fuel here? Greater MSP, Delta, folks came together. The state introduced significant, right, tax breaks for folks to be able to do this work. A year later, we had the first flight, right, from MSP, the first Delta flight that was run on sustainable aviation fuel. That feels like for us in this moment, the real opportunity to figure out how we, of course, will continue these investments at the state level. It's in the proposed budget, and I think really matters, you know, at that level, but also federally, what else can we do there that will assist, you know, Minnesota companies that want to attract more folks and grow here as we continue to be the hub of innovation for the upper Midwest. And I know that there's so much more that we can do. I think we've got, you know, we've got incredible business leaders who I think care tremendously about the future of the state. I'm eager to partner with them to make sure that we're doing everything that we can at the federal level. And this idea right now that we are attacking the very infrastructure that allows any kind of predictability for business leaders, any predictability for folks, you know, who are working in, you know, local municipalities. How do we know, you know, what is coming in the future? That is not at all helpful for growth or innovation. And, you know, I want to be a partner that's, you know, able to bring those good ideas, but also those opportunities. And I think something like sustainable aviation fuel is really the model for what we could do in so many other places, especially that impacts, you know, the economy in greater Minnesota, but just puts Minnesota on the map continually for that innovation and opportunity.
You know, you brought up sustainable aviation fuel, so I have to disclose that I represent Delta. So, full disclosure, I always like to be transparent, as you know, Lieutenant Governor. But one of the things about sustainable aviation fuel and some of the other businesses, and you talk about this, is they need changes to the permitting system in Minnesota, and that is something that, you know, businesses have been saying for a long time before the Walz administration that it just hasn't gotten done, and other states have gotten it done, especially our border states. Is there a sense that just there's not urgency there that could bring more jobs to the state without, you know, project by project changes? Or I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but that is one of the things that has been a top priority for probably 12 years here.
I mean, I think that the Walz administration has certainly heard that and has worked to make permitting changes. And I think that continues to be a work in progress. But I think the answer is yes, that, you know, there are places where I think especially around issues around housing, this is something that we hear. The two issues that I hear about the most when I travel to Greater Minnesota is childcare and housing. And I think housing is one of those places where, especially for folks, you know, who want to build, we need to make sure that we build safely, of course. You know, we need more housing. We need more housing if we're going to expand you know, have those opportunities for folks all across the state. I think that is an area where we could do better and be more efficient with permitting and building. And I think the goal always, right, is to do things safely. You know, you've certainly heard this a tremendous amount from the Walz Flanagan administration, right? We're going to follow the science. We're going to follow the law. But we have to make sure also that, you know, we protect workers, protect the environment, do so as efficiently as possible for folks. Because I want to make sure that people know that there is opportunity here. And so, you know, working in partnership with businesses across the state, I think is, you know, and determining what else we can do at the federal level, I think matters. But I also think, again, just the total chaos of this moment with Donald Trump is not lending itself to being able to do those things easily either, right? Like we've heard about, you know, folks who work on permitting, you know, in the state of Texas for, you know, new oil rigs and facilities there who just got fired. And right. So it's not even like it's, you know, it's not even like it's just like one area in particular. They're just sort of like, you know, slash and burn, you know, firing everybody everywhere. So that, again, comes back to, right, we need efficiency, but we need predictability. What the heck is going on? Who do I talk to? And those delays right now are prohibiting, you know, businesses from making any decisions, because you have to be able to predict, you know, what's coming. And in the last 70 days or so, it has been a hot mess. And I think for so many folks, regardless of the industry in which you work, it's been whack-a-mole every day. We can't build an economy that's, you know, complete, you know, when we have no idea what we're going to wake up to the next morning. So I'm going to fight for that predictability and working in partnership, you know, with business leaders in the state to say, like, you know, we got to stop the chaos, but then, you know, what works well other places? What should we be fighting for at the federal level? I'm all ears. And I think, you know, that is the opportunity that comes out of this moment. You know, there's some things that are not working. So like, how do we build it in a way that works better for folks?
Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, I know we will talk down the line. I know we'll have debates and forums and all those fun things. And I look forward to talking to you then. Thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Thanks so much, Blaise.
When we come back, this week's take.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. This week's take is about the future of the Republican Party. As I said last week, signs are that the loyalty to Trump may break in the coming months. But I want to talk about 2026. We've had two candidates on from the DFL the last 2 weeks. We had Adam Schwarzy on earlier when he announced for U.S. Senate. Royce White has announced. But when will Republicans who can win and raise the money emerge? I think Adam Schwarzy has some potential, but Royce White blew up again this week at Tom Hauser, and you know his 35 or 37% showing against Amy Klobuchar says that he probably can't win the race next year. Republicans need to find candidates who can run statewide. They will have a Senate race, a governor's race, an attorney general's race, an auditor's race, and a Secretary of State's race to put up candidates next year. Their bench is not proven to be very strong. And with the congressional delegation of Tom Emmer and Michelle Fischbach, Pete Stauber, and Brad Finstead seemingly opting to stay in the U.S. House, they're going to need some new blood, some new energy. I think the thing to watch is, does a Republican just go straight to a primary in either the governor's race or the Senate race? I think that is the way that they could get through and find a more fundable mainstream candidate that could challenge a DFLer statewide. After all, their endorsed candidates have not been successful. Scott Jensen showing all signs that he's going to run for governor again. Jim Schultz feels like he might be gearing up to run for something as well, maybe attorney general again. You know, the Republicans just haven't had a great bench of candidates, and that's what happens when you don't win statewide for quite a while. Now, if Democrats move left, then Republicans could have an opportunity. Democrats could have their own shuffle should Governor Wallace choose not to run again. That would create an opening that people would jump at, and then you'd have a scramble. So as we look forward to next year, watch legislators. Watch legislators like Jordan Rasmussen, Zach Duckworth, Kristen Robbins, Julia Coleman. Watch them and see how they're positioning themselves. See what they're up for. See what they're running for or what they might be running for. What are the issues that they're championing? Those are the best names, I think, on the list for the Republicans on the bench, in addition to Jim Schultz and maybe Scott Jensen if he found some discipline in his campaign, unlike last time. But until Republicans find discipline, they find mainstream messages, and they find candidates with a vision, not just anger, they're going to be troubled to win statewide in Minnesota. And if the economy keeps doing what it's doing, the midterm will be very good for Democrats. But that's a long ways away, and we'll be here to cover it. That's this week's take. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. You can follow along on all our work at thedailyagenda.com. Until next Sunday, that's the take. Corzo's up next, and I want to hear.
A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code DIFFERENCE for 50% off select plans. Terms and conditions apply.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WESHARE. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShareHealth. We got you.
Hear what he thinks about renaming Williams Arena or selling the naming rights. Take care.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, "What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels?" Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShareHealth. We got you.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.